Dr. William Luther Pierce, 2001, Terrorism and Hate.
Hello. I love to read my hate mail. The shriller it gets, the better I feel, because shrillness is a sign of fear and lack of confidence on the part of the haters. These days, my hate mail is pretty shrill, and that's understandable in view of the events of the past couple of months. There's a lot of flag-waving and strutting and boasting by the politicians and the media people and by their hangers-on among the general public. I call the latter people yahoos. A yahoo is a lot like a lemming, but louder and more obnoxious. We're really giving those towel heads in Afghanistan a licking, the yahoos are bragging. We've blown the bejesus out of them with our cluster bombs and our cruise missiles, and they haven't been able to hit us back with even a single missile or bomb. We've really taught them not to mess with us, because we're the greatest, we're the toughest, and if you even look sideways at us, we'll clean your clock. That's the public stance of the politicians and the media people and the yahoos and the retired generals and other experts hired by the media to provide bellicose statements to keep the yahoos fired up. But behind the confident, swaggering front, all is not well. For one thing, the Afghans are proving themselves a bit tougher than the Bush government thought. For 5 weeks, U.S. forces have carpet-bombed them, reduced the number of their villages to rubble, destroyed their air defense system, hit every cave in which they think Osama bin Laden may be hiding with bunker-busting bombs, wrecked their power plants, supplied mercenary rebel forces inside Afghanistan with bribes and weapons, and repeatedly predicted the imminent collapse of the Taliban government. And yet, the government has not collapsed, and Osama bin Laden continues to issue public statements. On the public relations front, the Bush government and the Jews are losing everywhere. The balked politicians in Pakistan and other places may be cheering every time the Americans send their bombers over Afghanistan, but the people in the streets are not. The Jews don't have the total control over the mass media in every country that they have in the United States, Canada, and most of Europe. The people throughout the Middle East and Asia are not happy seeing on their television screens night after night the bodies of Afghan villagers killed by American cruise missiles. They are not happy seeing images of maimed Afghan children who have lost eyes or arms or legs to American cluster bombs. The Jews and the Bushites can't understand it. The people being killed by the bombing of Afghanistan aren't Jews, and they aren't even Americans. Why should anyone care what happens to them? Besides, the Americans are dropping food packages to make up for the bombing and killing. Doesn't that make everything all right? It is inconceivable to the fat, smug bureaucrats in Washington who have bought, bribed, corrupted, and bullied their way around the world ever since the Second World War that there still are people in the world with a sense of pride, people who care about more than money and free food and being comfortable, people who will fight, even against overwhelming odds, to keep their independence and their way of life. It is interesting to note, by the way, that not all of the people in Afghanistan are black-haired, swarthy, greasy, hook-nosed Middle Eastern types. Some of the tribes are white, with reddish-brown hair, white skin, and European features. Aryan people conquered and colonized that part of the world 35 centuries ago, and there are pockets of us remaining in some of the mountainous, isolated areas. Of course, there is no doubt that the United States eventually can whip the Taliban and install a puppet government in Kabul. If the Bush government is willing to drop enough cluster bombs on Afghan villages and fire enough cruise missiles into Afghan cities. The U.S. military machine is vastly more powerful than anything the Afghans have, and Washington also has the economic resources to wage a long war of attrition and starve Afghanistan into submission. Perhaps we should remember, however, that the Soviet Union succeeded in setting up a communist puppet government in Kabul, and then, with that puppet government already in place, rocketed and bombed Afghan villages for 8 long years, and still managed to lose the war and 15,000 Soviet soldiers in the process. On the home front, there is more reason for shrillness. The anthrax terror has killed only a handful of people so far, but it has had an enormous psychological impact on the public. Even though the likelihood of being struck by lightning is far greater than the likelihood of receiving an anthrax-infected letter in the mail, many Americans have been spooked. Housewives who never would be deliberate targets of an anthrax attack are worrying seriously about how to sterilize their incoming mail with a steam iron. And certainly every American has been impressed by how much disruption can be caused by a single terrorist. I'm assuming that just one person or a very small group of people has been preparing and mailing all of the anthrax letters. And he not only has spooked the whole country, but he also has done hundreds of millions of dollars worth of damage by causing postal centers, government offices, and business and industrial facilities to be shut down for weeks at a time for decontamination operations. And despite an enormous effort by the FBI and other secret police agencies, he hasn't been caught. He can do it again whenever he wants. Or if not him, anyone else with a little training in microbiology. Even though most of the public really hasn't thought carefully about the implications of all this and drawn any clear and concrete conclusions, there is a vague but growing awareness that we all are living in a world that is a bit more dangerous than most people had believed it to be. There is more awareness that the government isn't omnipotent and cannot guarantee everyone's safety or solve all his problems. And this awareness has caused some uneasiness. Not a lot for most people, but enough to be perceptible, enough to steal a small amount of peace of mind from the Sally Soccer Moms and the Joe Sixpacks, who just want to do their mall shopping and their TV viewing without intrusive worries about what the next unpleasant and dangerous surprise will be. It's not the Sally Soccer Moms and the Joe Sixpacks who are sending me hate mail, though. They don't care much about what happens outside their living rooms and the nearest shopping mall. Not enough, anyway, to send me a hate letter. The real haters are those who have an emotional investment in the destructive trends and programs that have been wrecking our society and our civilization during the past half century. They are the ideological egalitarians and the multiculturalists and the diversity mongers who enthusiastically have promoted every sick and perverted policy put forward by the Jewish media. They have been in favor of racial hiring quotas and the lowering of academic standards in order to get more non-whites into our universities, and open borders, and interracial sex, and gun control, and hate crime laws, and speech crime laws. And they have been pretty cocky most of the time, because they believed they were on a roll. They had the power of the government and the media behind them, and they didn't see how they could lose. They really believed that they could ram their filthy new world order down everyone's throat and we couldn't do anything about it. They believed that they were the inevitable wave of the future, and that nothing could stop the birth of the sick new world of enforced equality and big brotherhood they envisioned. Well, most of them still believe that, but they've had their cages rattled a bit by the events of the last 2 months. I doubt that it has occurred to any of them that when their schemes finally come unraveled, and the society they have been poisoning for so many years finally gives up the ghost, and they no longer have a treasonous government to protect them, they will be called to account for their crimes and dealt with appropriately. I doubt that any of them are afraid of that yet. They still believe that they can carry on with impunity. But there is a glimmer of recognition among them of the fact that there may be unforeseen dangers in what they are doing. There may be obstacles for them to overcome that they hadn't counted on. There are unpredictable forces at work in the world that they don't know how to deal with. And here I am, continuing to nip at their heels and make a nuisance of myself when they have all these new problems to worry about. That's what provokes them into sending me hate mail, I believe. Many of the haters are Christians who believe that they are pleasing Jesus by pulling the white race down to the level of the world's non-whites. The first shall be last, and the last shall be first. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. That sort of thing. You'd be surprised at how many of the hate letters I receive quote verses from the Bible intended to prove to me that all of God's children were created equal, and that God intended for us all to mix together, and that whites, in holding themselves apart and rising above the colored races, have contravened the will of God and deserve to be punished, and that I, in opposing their sacred work of pulling the whites down to where God intended them to be, am being especially sinful and deserve especially severe punishment. About as numerous and as hateful as the Bible thumpers are the oh-so-desperate-to-be-fashionable types who really hate me for raising issues they prefer not to think about, issues that only can complicate their quest for fashionableness, acceptance, approval, and prosperity in the new world order of equality and togetherness. Many of these announce how unpleasantly surprised and even disgusted they are that in the 21st century there still are people like me with such old-fashioned ideas on race and nationalism and the proper roles of the sexes, and with my belief in human inequality and in the need for discipline and order and individual responsibility and for a strong sense of racial identity. These old-fashioned ideas of mine, of course, are just as valid today as they ever were, but they are in conflict with the trends that these fashionable types feel obliged to follow if they are to keep in step with the media and be popular and prosperous. Now, if they really believed that my old-fashioned ideas were not valid, then they could just laugh at me and ignore me. But they have this dreadful fear deep down inside themselves that I am right after all, and that the trends they are following can lead us only to disaster and extinction. They don't want to think about that. And when they were pretty confident in the ability of the government to keep things moving in a Jewish direction and keep people like me from rocking the boat, they didn't have to think about it. But the events of the last 2 months have shaken their confidence that the government has everything under control. And these awful, old-fashioned ideas of mine are still being rubbed in their faces. They wish I would shut up. There's one more thing that has thrown these haters off balance and provoked them into screaming at me, and that is the nagging knowledge that the sudden loss of confidence and security they are feeling now is not the result of anything I have said or done, but rather is the consequence of the policies they have been promoting and against which I have been preaching for years. I certainly have never been pro-Arab or pro-Muslim, but I have said over and over again that we need have no fundamental conflict with Arabs or Muslims because they are in their part of the world and we are in ours. They have their religion and their way of life and we have ours. Because we are separate and both of us would like to stay that way, we need have no conflict. They have oil, of course, and we would like to have their oil, but they are only too happy to sell it to us. So really, there is no reason for us to hate each other as long as we stay out of their affairs and they stay out of ours. Separation and non-interference make good neighbors. The one thing that has brought about conflict between us is the Jewish lust for power and control in the Arab part of the world and our support of the Jews. The fashionable set understand that as well as I do, but they aren't permitted to talk about it, and they certainly don't like hearing about it from me. They've always supported Jewish aggression in the Middle East, just as they've always supported everything else Jewish. They admire the Jews enormously because the Jews are so rich and so ruthless and seem to be able to get away with just about every sort of brazen chicanery. Nevertheless, what happened 2 months ago is a sharp reminder to them that not even those who have scrambled aboard the Jewish bandwagon are guaranteed a smooth ride. Finally, there is the glaring fact that they have pushed for open borders, while I have pushed for the exclusion of all non-whites from America. And if my policy had prevailed instead of theirs, the attack of September the 11th could not have taken place. Anyway, what it all boils down to is that the people who thought America was on the right track in becoming less white and less masculine and less free and more under the thumb of the Jews are a little less confident now and therefore a little more hateful. But they are no less determined. They're not about to change their ways at this stage. It'll take a lot more hijacked airliners, collapsed office buildings, and anthrax mailings to destroy that much of their confidence. And so they have reaffirmed their allegiance to the Jewish program for a totally multiculturalized America, an affirmative action America, a mongrelized America, an America that looks like an MPV set. But still, they are a little less confident than they were. And this loss of confidence, this nagging fear that maybe their plan to profit from the destruction of their race and of the civilization built by their race may have a hitch in it after all. This loss of confidence manifests itself not only in a little more overt hatefulness, but also in an increased determination to crush all opposition. If these old-fashioned heterosexual white males like me, and a few old-fashioned heterosexual white females as well, refuse to go along with their plan, then they'll get the secret police to make us go along. If we insist on being divisive and stirring up opposition to the continued multiculturalization of America, then they'll have their secret police tap our telephones and intercept our mail and secretly search our homes and plant bugs while we're away. They'll classify us as terrorists and take away all our civil rights. That's what they think they'll do anyway. That was the real purpose of their so-called USA Patriot Law. They are not really afraid of Arab hijackers. They know that the Arabs aren't capable of derailing their plans for equalizing America. The Arabs aren't capable of turning any substantial portion of the American public against them. Middle Eastern terrorists cannot take control of American public opinion away from Hollywood and the other Jewish media. If they lose their grip on America. It won't be the Taliban hunting them down and stringing them up for their crimes against America and against our people. The scuttling of the Bill of Rights is being done under cover of the need to protect Americans from foreign terrorists. But the real reason is to protect them from the wrath of the still patriotic segment of the American people, if that patriotic segment can be awakened and informed and organized and inspired to act. That's our job. And because we're working on that job day and night and are determined to do whatever it takes to get the job done, they hate us. I don't believe they really fear us yet. After all, they have the secret police behind them. They have all the repressive armed might of the federal government behind them. And all we are able to do is talk and spread facts and ideas among our people and try to get our people to think for themselves and to accept their responsibility as Americans, as white men and women. That's enough to make America's internal enemies, whether of the Bible-thumping variety or of the ideologically fashionable variety, hate us, but not enough yet to make them fear us. Nevertheless, they believe it is only prudent to begin curtailing our civil liberties under the guise of protecting America from the threat of foreign terrorism. Thinking about all of this, I've tried to decide what the long-term effect of the events of September the 11th will be, besides a lot of bombed Afghan villages and dead Afghans. Is it good that the cages of America's internal enemies have been rattled and their confidence has been shaken a bit, even though they have been put on their guard? Or would it have been better for them to have remained supremely confident that nothing could halt their plan for the multiculturalization of America? Is it good that they have stepped up their suppression of Americans' civil liberties? Will legislative assaults on the Bill of Rights, such as the USA Patriot Law, awaken real patriots to the fact that the government in Washington is far more an enemy of America's freedom than Osama bin Laden is? Or will such laws intimidate wavering patriots into silence and inaction? I believe it's too soon for me to be able to answer these questions with any degree of certainty. At this point, I can't even say whether terrorism is helpful or harmful or doesn't make much difference. Does it hurt America in the long run by solidifying the support of the Sally Soccer Moms and Joe Sixpacks behind the federal government and America's other internal enemies? Or does it help America by eroding the faith of the public and the ability of the government to protect them? We'll have a better understanding of such questions later, because we certainly will be gaining much more experience with both terrorism and governmental suppression of civil liberties. America is in a downward spiral now, and when we will break out of it, and what roles terrorism and repression will play in breaking out of it, remain to be seen. Meanwhile, we know what our task is, and we should let the hatred of America's internal enemies that is directed against us serve to goad us to ever greater effort, and ever greater commitment, and ever greater vigilance. Thanks for being with me again today.